Hebraic Roots Network presents Revive 2022 Leadership Conference with Bill Cloud.
All right. Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We'll try that again. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
All right. There we go. All right. Before we do anything else, I want to make certain that everybody knows who I'm with. I'm going to introduce my or reintroduce my wife to everybody. Beth, just stand up real quick. Well, I think most everyone here knows Beth or has met Beth, but so many years I traveled, you know, people will ask me, we've heard about Beth, but does she really exist?
Yeah.
So, well, anyway, so we're glad to be here. And before I actually get into what I'm going to talk about, you know, Mark was talking about how he has had Timothy's or has Timothy's in his life and Paul's in his life. I just want to reiterate that. The same is true for me. And for Beth and for me, and especially in this role that we find ourselves in now, leading this congregation, Mark and Tammy have been Paul's to Beth and to me. And I just want to acknowledge that. And in fact, a lot of, well, many things that we've incorporated into how we do things at Jacob's Tent, we learned from Mark and Tammy and the people at River of Life, because when I was doing all that traveling, going from place to place, Gates of Zion would be another one. There's a couple of others, and I could count them on this hand. I hate to say it, but I could count them on this hand, those places that we went to that we were ministered to, that we were refreshed. And so a lot of the going around, I learned what not to do. And so anyway, for what it's worth, okay, so I need everybody here to understand that for Beth and for me, as far as experience in pastoring in terms of leading a congregation, that really only goes back to February of 2019. And so I'm looking around the room and I'm seeing people who've been leading congregations far longer than that. And so I kind of feel silly in some ways getting up here and telling you, here are the things that you need to know about leading the congregation. But is there anyone here that you are just considering starting a congregation, but you haven't actually done that yet? Is there anyone that falls in that category? Okay. Where are you guys from?
Whitefield, Indiana.
Okay. All right. Now, I know Gabe and Dawn have started a congregation in Florida about, what did you say, 8 months ago, 9 months ago? Less than a year. Okay. All right. So is anyone else fall into that category that is just kind of a new, fairly new? Is that not you guys?
I don't believe it, but yeah, in Birmingham, we're growing big.
Okay. All right. So again, the point is there's people here who've been doing this for a very long time. So I am going to share with you what Beth and I have learned. And as I said, a lot of that is what not to do. Because when we were doing all that traveling, we would go to different groups and we'd go 1 year and it'd be a nice size group. We'd go the next year, half that size. What happened? Yeah, we started talking about flat earth, you know, or
exactly.
Pick your topic.
Exactly.
So we learned what not to do. So here's my top 10 things that I believe every congregational leader needs to consider. And a lot of these things you probably already know. Maybe some of them you have not thought about. Number one, more than anything else, I think people want to be part of a family. More than great teaching, and we need great teaching, more than great music, and great music is wonderful, more than anything else, what we're discovering is that people want to be part of a family. They want to be part of a community. Those other things, I don't want anyone to go away thinking I don't esteem those things. They're a very important component of what we do. But as Mark's already spoken about, people are coming in and they want to know, is this place safe for my children? Is this place safe for my children, for my family? Are we going to be encouraged? Is it a place that they're going to be able to fit into? And is it a place that's going to support them as they're trying to walk out this set-apart life? Because a lot of their family has turned away from them. A lot of their friends and coworkers have turned away from them. And so they want to be in a place where they know that there's going to be encouragement, there's going to be support, there's going to be parameters, there's going to be boundaries, there's going to be the things that say this is a safe place to be. And so that is why, one of the reasons why, that community is so important. Now, you didn't hear it from me, but the days of all the teachers going around from place to place to place to place to place, from town to town, from conference to conference, largely, in my view, is starting to come to an end. And that is not to speak negatively of people who do that. I did that 20 years or more. It's just to emphasize that the winds of change are blowing. You know, there's a season that is coming to a close, and there's another season that is simultaneously beginning, because to everything, there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. In our life, personally, the clouds, me going around from town to town doing all those things, it served a purpose. Not only, you know, was I allowed to go out and share things with different groups, but I learned a lot of things, you know, spiritually, personally, you know, the whole gamut. So it did serve a purpose. But I do believe that that season is starting to draw to a close. And community is where the winds of change are blowing. So more than going out and scattering seed as we did, I think that seed, having been watered now, it's producing the fruit that says we need to be gathered into communities. And I believe that people are ready for it. I believe they're pumped and primed, they're ready to be part of the family. So that's the one thing I've learned. Number two, all families have all kinds of people. There are going to be standouts, good and bad. There is always going to be the rebellious child and the crazy uncle. Yeah. It's just the way it is. There'll be Joshuas that will stand with you, to help you, to assist you, to encourage you, and there's going to be those people who are going to test you and push all of your buttons. There'll be people to encourage you, and there are people who will drain every ounce of energy from you if you allow that to happen. There are going to be people who will be so glad to be part of this community, and then there are going to be people who could find rust on a gold bar. You know, it's just the way it is, right? So then, understanding that, there's some things that need to be settled in our heart. And that is it truly in our heart to do this?
Yes.
It has to be more than just this. It's got to be in our heart to do it. And I guess that means, really, we need to determine whether we are actually called to do this or not. Because I know some people feel like they get pushed into it. Some people, maybe I shouldn't get into this. If you're not called, it's going to be tough. I'll just put it that way. Because in many respects, and some of you already know this, some of you are discovering this, some of you will discover this, leading a congregation is going to take over your life. It's going to take over. Am I right, Tammy, Mark?
Yes, absolutely.
Craig, Jen, am I right? Are you discovering that, Gabe and Dawn? It will take over your life. And overnight, you're going to have all these other children you didn't know that you had who have great need of your attention. All right? So after following the Messiah and next to being married, as far as I'm concerned, this is one of the hardest things I've ever done. Or let me rephrase it. Most challenging things that I've ever done. Because in leading a congregation, what it is provoking in me is to realize those areas in my life that I really need to get my act together, that I really need to mature even more, that I need to grow stronger in, those kinds of things. And on that note, as you lead a congregation or considering leading the congregation, and even if you've been doing it for 20 years, make sure your marriage is solid. Because that is going to get tested in ways that maybe you didn't imagine. It'll put your marriage relationship to the test, and that's not necessarily bad. It's just that it will. Because, and I'll use Beth and myself as an example, she has a certain perspective, and on some things I have a slightly different perspective. She has a different way of doing things than I have, And sometimes we meet these challenges, and then I will say we need to do it this way, and she thinks we ought to do it that way again. You know? And all of a sudden, I didn't see this coming. All right? I might be exaggerating just a little bit, but the point is, there will be things that will pop up as you shepherd and as you lead the congregation that will come home and put some things in your relationship to the test. Sorry? I know, help opposite. I'm not going to say what I was going to say. It went into my head. Wisdom said, don't. Don't. All of that is to say, be viewed by the congregation as a team.
Yes.
I know that men lead, but we need our wives next to us as we lead. And we need to be viewed as a team, an inseparable team. And not let people come to you about something and work and pit one against the other. Because just like your children growing up will work mom against dad, guess what? People in the congregation will do it too. These are things I never thought about. You know, just we're learning on the job. That's right. I wouldn't have done it. All right. Number one was people want to be part of the family. Number two, all families have all kinds of people. Number three, is it in your heart to do this? So number four, be secure in your own skin. All of us are going to second guess ourselves when we have to make decisions. We have to set a course. And so if you're human, you're going to second guess yourself. You're going to be in those times and those places, even though you've prayed about it, even though you've sought the Father, you're going to doubt your abilities sometimes. Ultimately, we know that we can only do this by the Spirit of God. Right? And if we're not filled with the Spirit, we need to get filled with the Spirit. We need the Spirit of God to lead and to direct us. Nevertheless, even being led and guided by the Spirit, we still have a responsibility as we make decisions, as we make choices. And so we need to recognize that one of the reasons that He has put this call upon your heart is that He has deposited in you certain skills, certain strengths, things that maybe some others don't have that you do. And the opposite of that is true. There are things that you don't possess that other person that's in your congregation may possess. There are strengths that my wife has, I don't. There are strengths that I have that she doesn't. And that's why we need to complement one another. So he deposits within us certain strengths, certain skills, and so we need to understand that. That does not mean to be overconfident, doesn't mean to be arrogant or anything like that, but we do need to acknowledge those things that God has deposited in you, and there's a reason He deposited them in you, to be put to use for assisting and encouraging and helping to grow, helping His people to grow and mature, and particularly in these communities. You know, Paul told Timothy to stir up that gift that's in you. And as far as I'm concerned, there is no better way to stir up that gift than get into the midst of a group of people in a congregation. Okay? So I want to make certain that you understand what I'm saying. Being secure in your own skin does not mean being arrogant, puffed up, and looking down on people. It just means recognizing when you say, I can't do this, I don't want to do this, I'm overwhelmed, I'm not the right guy. That's what Moses was saying. And he kept saying it until God got mad at him. Right? So I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. But in recognizing your strengths, it is also important, maybe even more important, to recognize your weaknesses. Lack of skills, lack of things that you're not as good at, things that you need improving. You need to recognize those things because a good leader is always going to be aware of where he is the weakest, and he will not ignore that. I'm not saying to advertise it. I'm just saying don't ignore it, because if you ignore it, the adversary will exploit it. So where you're weak, if you're a good general and you realize you have a weak point in the line, what do? You take measures to strengthen that weak spot. And that's what we all need to do as we lead. Because you will find, as you most probably already have, when you're dealing with people, especially the crazy uncle, it can expose a weak point, you know? And so these are things that we have to work on, because no one here is Superman, no one is Superwoman, and none of us should pretend we are. In fact, while we don't want to advertise our weaknesses, and we don't want to pretend that they aren't there, because I believe that most people, most reasonable people, will appreciate your humility and your, if I can use this term, humanness, more so than someone who presents themselves as Superman or Superwoman. Amen. Moses was the meekest man on the face of the earth, or words to that effect, right? And yet that's the one that the creator of all things gave the Torah to, the meek man, the humility. And so in walking the Torah out, it seems to me that we're not going to be able to do this unless humility is a big part of what we do. In fact, I say this for me, not for anybody else, for me. Here's how I knew that we were supposed to do this, Beth and I, leaving this congregation, because I didn't want to do it. Moses said, I don't want to do this. You got the wrong guy. I can't do this. I can't do that. And it seems to me that the shepherds that God usually picks are the people who don't really want to do it. Mark testified to that earlier. It's the ones who really want to do it because I can do it really well. Well, I won't go there. I won't go there. Anyway. So, humility, recognize your weaknesses, don't advertise them, work on them, but don't try to be Superman, and at the same time, don't shy away from your strengths either. Don't doubt your call. All right, number five, somebody has to make the decisions, and that might as well be you. All right, I'm going to share my very strong opinion. As noble as it sounds to have a team of leaders, people are all on the same level and we're all going to make these decisions together. It doesn't work. I'm sorry, I've never seen it work. Now, I'm not going to say it has never, ever, ever in the history of man worked. I'm not going to say that. But I've never seen it function. Have you, Mark? All right, Mark shaking his head, no. All right? So I'm of the opinion that a team of leaders functioning as the head doesn't work. All right? The biblical examples that I see, I know that some people like to, you know, go to the book of Acts. Well, they had the council and all this kind of stuff. Look, let's go back a little farther. Yes. Moses. Yes. Right? Moses was the one that God spoke to, and then through Moses, he spoke to the others. And yes, Moses had need of counsel. He had need of those who would assist him and help him to bear the burdens of leadership. And so, yes, a multitude of counsel is wise. It's something we need. Advisors, absolutely. Governing by committee, yet. No. Nada. No. Somebody has to make the decision because of this other way, it lends, as far as I'm concerned, it lends itself to immobility. Absolutely. Doing nothing, sitting around talking about what you're going to do and never actually doing anything, or going in 900 different directions because everybody's got an opinion.
Yes, that's right.
And everybody believes that their opinion is the way to do it. Nothing wrong with all those different opinions, but somebody has to be there to make the decision. So deliberate, pray, seek counsel, but decide.
That's right.
Make decisions. And when you know what to do, and when you know when to do it, because knowing what to do is half of it. When to do it is very important as well. But when you have those things and you feel confident, and after seeking counsel and advice and praying about this, make a decision. When you know that what to do and when to do, then move. And then once you've done that, then be prepared for the naysayers. Yes. Be prepared for the armchair quarterbacks. Be prepared for the folks that say, well, you shouldn't have done it that way. You should have done it this way. Be prepared for the people who come and sit in front of you with a list of things. At 2:30, you need to do this.
Right.
Conversation that Craig and Jan and I were having earlier. because there are going to be plenty of people who are going to have an opinion. But how many of those people who have an opinion have actually stepped forward to try to lead a congregation? Okay? I'm not putting the people down because these are the people that we're being called to shepherd. These are the people that we're being called on his behalf to lead and to shepherd. So in that vein of thought, I want you to consider something else. Number six, and Mark's already kind of alluded to this, you're being entrusted with the Father's reputation. So if he's trusting you with this, it's very important that you do not mishandle it. Do not mishandle that trust that he's placed in you. And make certain going forward that he's going to continue to be able to trust you and how you deal with his people. He wants to be able to, he needs to be able to trust you with his people. So, there are certain mistakes that we can make as shepherds and leaders. Mark talked about that as well. They made mistakes along the way. We've made mistakes in Jacob's tent. And there are certain mistakes that, although we don't try to, it's just, it seems to me, being, to be part of the process and almost inevitable not to make a mistake. But there are some mistakes that you can make, repent, and recover from. But mistreating his people is a mistake that you do not want to make. Our job, our commission, I guess, is to be servants. The head servant, perhaps, but nevertheless to be servants and not to be served. And I say that because there are going to be plenty of people who will show up wanting to help you and to serve you. And that's a wonderful thing. It's just that we need to always guard ourselves against taking that for granted and taking advantage of it. So it comes back to, as far as I'm concerned, the whole humility thing. Stay humble. If you're a type A personality, work on some things. Okay? Balance out that aggressive nature with, you need that humility as you lead. There's nothing wrong with being a type A. I've got several of them in my family. Not looking at anybody in particular, but no, I'm just playing. I'm playing. No, our son Alan, that was a joke. Is she looking at me? Looking through me. Okay. Our son Alan, you know, we've kid about this, but it's true. We call him AAA sometimes because he's a type A personality on steroids, you know. And it's really hard sometimes. It's a struggle sometimes to deal with this kid. I mean, there were days when he was 3, 4, 5, 6. I would get flustered. I'm like, oh, God, I'm just going to have to kill him, you know. But no, as he's matured, you know, and we've tried to, you know, kind of coach him a little bit, you know, you can see some of it starting to get a little soft edge. And he's very intelligent. He's very focused, goal-oriented, driven, you know, all those things that can be used for good. So that type A personality is good. It's just that we need to remember that we're dealing with God's people. Not everybody thinks the way we do. Not everybody reacts the same way we do. They come from a different background than you. They have a different perspective than you. These are all things that we need to keep in mind as we deal with his people. So you represent the Father to his people. So make sure that you sanctify his name before the people and not profane it. Okay? Numbers chapter 20. This is something I always keep in front of me. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron. This is verse 12. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe me to hallow me or to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. And we've talked, if you've midrashed about this like we have over and over, man, that seems like a pretty harsh penalty for striking the rock when you're supposed to speak to the rock. But the issue is, he did not sanctify the Father in the eyes of the people. Amen. That's the issue. And for leaders, It is something we just need to keep before us all the time. That whether we like it or not, they're looking, the folks in the congregation are looking to us to set the example and to lead the way. And in some ways, and I want to be careful how I say this, but in some ways we are representing the Father to them. I mean, they have their relationship with the Father, don't get me wrong. But in some ways, we are representing the Father to them because they are looking to us as his representative, the ones that he's put in position to shepherd. And so it is very important how we represent him to them. Humility, again. Long-suffering. I used to read that word in the Bible a lot. Now I'm learning what that word really means. Suffering long. You know, I would never do it, but if I ever wanted to get some shrapnel in my tongue, they wouldn't have to pierce a hole, and it already has several there, you know? But suffering long, because, again, you are going to have the crazy uncle. You are going to have the rebellious child. You are going to have the people that are pushing all your buttons. And these are the ones that God is bringing to us. Because going back to something I said earlier, most of these people, they want to be part of the family. They want to be loved. They want to be encouraged. They want to be challenged, yes. We've had, I can't even count, the number of people who have come in to be part of Jacob's tent who have come in defeated, depressed, just beaten down, disillusioned, discouraged. Very few of them come in, hey, it's great to be here. What can we do? It's always, they come in, and I'm going to say this, ladies, forgive me. They come in like a bunch of dogs sniffing another dog's butt. Are you going to hurt me? Are you going to do something against me to put me down and all these kinds of things? That's how they're coming in. And when they're coming in, this is the way Beth put it, they take the face of that other person who hurt them, that other pastor, that other leader, that other rabbi, that whatever it was, they take their face and they put it on yours.
Yes, that's right.
And they're responding to all that stuff, but they're having to deal with you, and you're having to deal with it, and you're wearing that mask that they have put on you. Suffering long. Be careful how we represent the Father to his people. That doesn't mean we enable bad behavior. It just means that we, well, as far as I'm concerned, if I'm going to make a mistake with God's people, it's going to be on the side of mercy. If I'm going to make a mistake with God's people, I'm going to err on the side of mercy. Because, well, I need it. So I won't read all of this passage because Mark's already read it, but another one that comes to mind was Jeremiah 23. Shepherds, beware that you don't scatter my sheep. Number 7, the buck stops here. Everything that happens in a congregation may not be your fault, but everything that happens in your congregation is your responsibility to respond to it, to manage it. Because the Father is going to look to you when things pop up to address, to correct if necessary, to minister to. Whatever the appropriate response is, it falls to us. And that is a pretty, for me, a very scary situation a lot of times. Because I do second guess myself. I do at times doubt, you know, my abilities. But that's where I have to know that he has set Beth and me in this position. And as Mark said, if you know that, you know, and you're staying in his word, you're trying to do what's right before his eyes, it'll be okay. It'll be a challenge, perhaps. There'll be some gut-wrenching moments. We keep a big bottle of ibuprofen right in the pantry. But anyway, it is our responsibility to respond to these things, even when, and most of the times, it isn't our fault. And that is where many of the previously mentioned topics that I've brought up come into play. They come to bear. Decisions have to be made, and how do you respond to this situation or that scenario? Sometimes it's going to require you to be very deliberate in how you respond, to make certain that everybody who's observing how you're going to respond, make sure they know how you're going to respond in those certain situations as well. But again, even then, if I'm going to make a mistake, it's going to be on the side of mercy, because our Father expects us to shepherd His people in the manner that He would, in a manner that is pleasing to Him, and kindness. Kindness goes a long way in, well, if you sow kindness today and the next day and the next day and the next day, when situations arise that you have to make a very deliberate and a very seemingly to some harsh decision, that kindness that you've shown all up until that time is going to really come in handy when you have to deal with something in a very deliberate way. Because, you know, if they haven't seen that kindness and you've just seen harsh, then they would just say, well, that's just, you know, they're just being even more harsh. But when they see that you're being kind to them, that you're treating them with long-suffering and compassion and mercy and things like that, again, not to enable bad behavior, but when you have to make decisions like that, they know your character. They know that your inclination is to be kind and merciful. And they'll realize that was something he really needed to do or she really needed to do in this situation, something that merited that. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That being established, we need to understand this. People are either going to trust you or they are not. When decisions have to be made, not in committee, but when decisions have to be made, people are either going to trust you or they are not. So first of all, we want to lead in such a way that inspires that trust, inspires them to trust us. And if they don't trust you, they may need to consider if this is the place they're supposed to be. Jacob's tent is not a fit for everyone. We've had to tell people, this may not be the right place for you. There are some people that I don't think it's the right place for them, but they're still there. And I can see it on the horizon. But, you know, it's true, you know, that if the Father has called you and He's put you in this position, you need to lead as He guides you. And realize people will either trust you or they will not. And you cannot let the naysayers and the people who have an opinion about everything dissuade you and discourage you from leading in the way that the Father has put it in your heart to lead. Okay? So those people who, well, I don't trust that, well, maybe this isn't the place for you. Because if they do stay and they don't trust you, you know what that leads to? Murmuring, grumbling, complaining, earth opening up, swallowing people, those kinds of things. You will pray that prayer. Number eight. And again, I know that some of you have been well into this leading the congregation. Some of you, it's just beginning. But wherever you're at in this, if you haven't done this, you need to move quickly to establish practices that promote accountability. You need to set up standards for operation that provides secure boundaries. Remember, we said there are people coming in, they want to know, is this a secure place and a safe place for my children, for my family? Is this a place that we're going to be ridiculed and put down and mistreated and things like this? And is it just kind of, you know, everything's loosey-goosey and, you know, let me... In the Hebrew Roots movement in times past, we would get together, and all these families would come together, usually with 17 children each, you know? And we don't have childcare in most of these situations. And so, you know, the kids are in the back with their coloring books, you know, and the baby's crying. And, you know, somebody's having the conversation off in the corner about this, that, and the other. And it was just kind of like, and I'm exaggerating a little bit, but everything's just kind of anything goes. Does anybody know what I'm talking about here? Okay. I'm going to suggest something to you. That there are people who are just looking to come to hang out with a group of people who dress like they do and think like they do. Just to have fellowship with one another. Here's what we're really all about. Having fellowship with Him. Right? And conforming to His standards and His ways of doing things. And there is a certain structure that has to be there. There are certain boundaries that have to be established so that when people who are coming looking for that safe place where they can worship and where they can grow closer to the Father, they can feel like there are boundaries, that there are borders, and there are things that aren't just going to be allowed to happen and be all loosey-goosey. I hope that went over the right way. So these boundaries need to be established. You need to identify what they are. You need to know in your heart these are not just arbitrary boundaries. These are things that are based on what we see in the Scripture. And then to move quickly to establish those boundaries, because this is going to protect you. It's going to protect your team leaders, your staff if you have them, and the congregation. It's for everybody's benefit. You go back to the very beginning. From day one, God established boundaries. He separated and divided the light from the darkness. He set the firmament to divide the waters above from the waters below. He gathered the waters into one place so that dry land could appear. And then he said to the seas, you can go this far, but you can't cross that line. So from the very beginning, we see that he defines boundaries and borders, separates things that are not supposed to be mixed with the other, so that there will be order. And in that order, there is safety, there is security, there's things can happen, there can be fruit produced, and all these different things that we want. But we have to be able to establish those boundaries. Now, I'm going to just give you some examples of things that, you know, and this is certainly not the entire list, and it's just kind of give you an idea of what I'm talking about. We don't do everything loosey-goosey. You know, we have a time when people go out and they eat, and they're in an oven egg, and children play, and they run, and they scream, and as Beth says, they get the wiggles out, you know, all those kinds of things. And then we do things, you know, specific for our kids in the afternoon. That's the way it works at our place. But when we come together and worship, it's not just anything goes, and everybody can do whatever they want. All right? And kind of in conjunction with that, from the very beginning, and I know that everyone's situation won't necessarily require this, but first, one of the first things that we did is we had security, and I mean professional security, because not only do these folks want to feel safe in terms of, am I going to get beat up, am I going to be ridiculed, but we just have to face the facts. If you're involved with something the Father is doing, count on it, the adversary is going to want to get right in the middle of it in any way he can, and that includes people who are coming for all the wrong reasons. I hate to say it, but it's just the real world. So we made a decision very early on. One of the things that we're going to do is we're going to have security. We're going to have people who are there, if need be, that could respond to a situation we pray never develops. You know, we're going to trust the Father first and foremost. But, you know, when they were rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem, they had a tool in one hand and what was in the other. They had a weapon because Sanballat is always trying to get in the midst of what the Father is doing. All right? So that may not apply to your situation right now, but it certainly applied to us. You know, one of the things that happened, and I say this because of what the Father's doing, you probably need to be prepared for this. It might be, as you continue with your congregation, as you establish your congregation, word's going to get out. And they're going to be moving from Minnesota, right? They're moving from everywhere we can think of into Jacob's tent. And you say, well, that would never happen to us. We never thought it would happen to us. But it is. And so we have to be prepared for the possibility that, you know, these kinds of things will happen. Anyway, have those boundaries. I think this is just a given. You know that when you've got children, if you decide to do anything for your children separately, you don't want just one person in there. Right? We want accountability. We want to have two or more adults in there. As far as our congregation, this is just us. You know, Beth and I don't touch the money. Don't touch it. Don't have anything to do with it. Now, we have people who do, and there is accountability. But we've just made the decision that we don't want to be part of the handling. We have oversight. We know what's going on, but we don't actually touch it. And why would I say something like that? Right? Yeah. So, yeah. So, and I know that other congregations and smaller congregations, you have to do that. Point being, identify these places where the crazy uncle and the rebellious son and just the people who can see rust on the gold bar are going to find fault, and preclude all that by having standards and practices that say and provide accountability. In every area, whatever it is, have oversight so that no one person is in control of everything. And I say that after having said that somebody's got to make the decisions. All right? So you'll have to balance that out in your mind. Know and define the boundaries. Be ready to support and to defend them. Be ready to defend them, because once you establish a boundary, it will be challenged by somebody eventually. Mark said it this way, Korah is coming. Right? And then when you put him out, what did he say? He's reincarnated in somebody else. And they're always going to be testing the boundaries. If you have children or even grandchildren, you know this to be true. Right? Someone you love more than life itself are going to test those boundaries. You know this is going to happen in the congregation. And so you have to be prepared to know what those boundaries are, to have defined those boundaries, and then be ready to defend them. Because you need to know in your heart and mind, and the congregation needs to know what you're going to allow and what you're not going to allow. For instance, what discussions are you going to allow to be entertained in Midrash? Or even in the worship? What conversations are you going to allow? In our congregation, I've told people, you know, I'll use this as an example. I don't care if you think the earth is flat or round. That's your business, but we're not going to discuss that here because it's not fruitful. What we're going to be concerned is not the shape of the earth, but what shape the earth is in. Okay? That's what we need to focus on. And so, you know, Nephilim, you know, I kind of joke about it from time to time, but if I even hint at Genesis 6, it is amazing to me how many people, well, you know, in there, who are those sons of God, and who are those Nephilim, and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, it gets into the weeds, it's distracting, it kind of pulls our energy away from what we need to be focused on. And, you know, sundown to sundown. Right? Calendars, pronunciations, take your pick. If you entertain too much discussion on these things, I guarantee you in time it'll take over.
Yes.
So you have to, things like that, you have to decide. All right, if you guys want to go to your house and talk about that, that's your business. In this house, here's where we're going to stay focused on. Okay? So determine where you stand on these things and lead from that place, because you need to remember this. If we've got a wheat field, guess who's wanting to get in when we're not looking? The tares. And you need to understand that tares are very aggressive. Tares are not content to stay in their own field. They're going to come, oh, there's a nice field. It's growing over here, looking good over here. I'm going to go get in the midst of that field. So the borders will need to be defended. And they need to be defended not just by the shepherds, but the people in the congregation need to realize that if God is doing something in our midst, If we have something good here, it is also our responsibility to defend those borders and to not allow these things to come in. And you need to help them to see. This isn't just me shepherding you. This needs to be, Mark put it this way, you lead from behind, but those mature sheep are in the front. And what is it doing? It's provoking the other sheep to kind of get in and follow their lead. So they need to understand that if you want this to be a good thing, productive, healthy, and thrive, and you don't want it to end up like the last place, then it is incumbent upon us all to understand where the borders are and be ready to defend those borders. They need to see the responsibility to defend them as well. And I believe that most people appreciate those boundaries. Most people appreciate when those boundaries are upheld and they're guarded because it reinforces this is a safe place. This is a safe place to be. All right, number 9. Recognize, I don't even know what time it is. Okay, we're going to be just right. Number 9, recognize the gifts that God brings to your group. I want to make certain I say this the right way. If the Father's put you there to be the shepherds, then you need to lead. But you never need to feel threatened when He brings others into your congregation who may know things that you don't know, and they can do things you don't know how to do. They have a skill set that you do not possess. I have something on my desk that is ascribed to Ronald Reagan. This says there's no limit to how far a man can go if he doesn't care who gets the credit.
That's good.
So the Father will bring people into our family, into our congregation, that will have skills that I don't have. That Beth and I, we thank the Father for, are surrounded with people who know how to do things that we don't know how to do. One of them is our son and his daughter. And, you know, I can... That's what I meant to say. Help opposite, y'all. Okay, yeah. She is our daughter, his wife. But, you know, Brandon, he knows how to do things I don't do. I don't know technology. I don't know those things. For instance, the live stream is a big part of what Jacob's Tent does. Every week, and I'm not saying this, everything is to the Father's glory. Our congregation isn't just the 350, 400 people who show up on Shabbat.
That's right.
Our congregation is almost 2,000 people who are joining us real time every Shabbat to watch on the live stream, which makes our lives even more interesting.
Yeah.
Point being is if I hadn't listened to my son, that probably would not have happened. And so consequently, there'd be a lot of people who join us every week who can't be in a congregation for whatever reason, physical disabilities, or people who are in the remote wilds of Alaska, that is actually true, who don't have anybody, can join us. Now, that doesn't replace a community, don't get me wrong. Point is, there will be people who will come into your congregation that will have skills, talents, that can help you do the things that you need to do. And so don't be threatened by that. Let people have opportunity to use their gift. However, that is only when you have qualified them. That is only after you have come to know them and you have seen them grow and function and mature and produce fruit in your community. Don't put a warm body in something.
That's right.
Don't do that.
That's right.
You'll regret that. But when these people come along and they have been content to just sit and listen and grow and become part of the family, and you've seen over time maturity and fruitfulness, then don't be intimidated by letting them do the things that God has given them to do. Observe and to know those that labor among you. But as it grows and you see their maturity, then make certain there's an environment where those people can function in their purpose too. Make sure that the Joshua is there and you're exhibiting those things that the Joshuas need to learn. Because if the Messiah tarries, there will come a day in Jacob's tent or river of life that somebody else will have to step up and to take it beyond where Mark can take river of life or where Bill can take Jacob's tent and our spouses. So there has to be this continuity. And so then we have to give them opportunity to plug in and to use those skills and gifts and even sometimes make some mistakes. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say here. So take your time in observing. Take your time in identifying those other leaders, deacons, elders, to use those words. This is something I learned from Mark and Tammy, Beth and I did, from the very beginning, and it was I'm very, very thankful that they offered this wisdom and that we listened. Don't get in a rush to establish elders. And I say that because if you have a congregation, you're starting a congregation, there will be people who will push you. Oh, where's the elders? And so when Mark and Tammy shared this with us, you know, that was one of the most important pieces of information that we got. Because here's what I've discovered. The folks that you think are going to be the leaders at the beginning aren't going to be the leaders.
That's true. That's right.
The ones that you would have never imagined in that role, those are the ones that over time you see, wow. Okay, time has a way of kind of clarifying some things for you. Time is a way of bringing certain things to the surface. So resist any inclination to just hurry up and put some elders in there. Resist that inclination. Resist those who are pushing you to do it prematurely. We go back to something we said earlier. They're going to trust you or they're not. Okay? So we have just now, we have just crossed the 3-year mark of being officially Jacob's tent. And just now what we have done is we have appointed what we're calling tribal captains who are going to function in more of a deacon-like function, not elders. We haven't even done that yet. Now, chances are the elders will come from this group. But what we're doing, and again, I want to credit Mark and Tammy for giving us this wisdom. We're going to put them in that capacity to see how they function in that situation. Even, you know, they've been vetted before this, but now we're going to put them in this situation. What are you going to do with a little bit of power? Okay? Responsibility, that's the better word. Okay? Thank you. You're his help opposite, not mine. No, but no, that's right. Responsibility, that is the better way to put it. Okay? Now, I know that some people will disagree with this, but I need to hurry here. I'll save that for later. All right, so anyway, recognize those who are gifted in ways that are helpful, but also recognize those who are gifted in ways that aren't so helpful. There are people who are very gifted in being negative. There are people who are just very gifted in being hangers-on. If I do this, does that say anything to you? Anyway, okay. Be ready for the usurpers. There are people in the Hebraic Roots community who could never or would never start a congregation. But as soon as you get going, they're going to show up. And they're going to start to interject their opinions, their agenda, and all these things. You need to be aware of that. You need to be ready for that. You need to know how to respond to that. You need to know that they're going to be the fish and loaves people, the folks that show up for what can I get? And as soon as there's no fish and loaves, they're gone. All right? Be able to recognize those people. I'm not saying disembowel them. I'm just saying recognize them. Okay? All right. Number 10, it's going to be hard to lead where you have not been. It's going to be hard to lead people where you have not been. And what I mean by that is to lead by example. That's something that Mark said. Lead by example. Don't ask people to do something you're unwilling to do, regardless of what it may be. In most congregations, at least starting out, you're probably going to be the ones to pull most of the weight. But that's a good thing. It's a good thing for people to see the leaders carrying that weight. It's a good thing for them to see that you're willing to take out the garbage,
yes,
to clean the commodes. And that's just a couple of examples. It's also good for them to see how you handle people, and that you handle them with compassion, with mercy, with patience, with long-suffering. Because when they see you giving that example, it'll inspire them to do the same. And if they're dealing with people in situations in the congregation that you haven't even heard about yet, and they're dealing with them compassionately, mercifully, patiently, that's going to help you in the end. Fewer fires for you to have to put out. When we are leading by example and instilling these things in the congregation, so that, again, to use Mark's analogy, that the more mature sheep are provoking the others who are coming in to kind of get behind them. This is the way we do things here, guys. We don't have a fight about something on Shabbat. We're here for one purpose, and that is to honor our King, to grow and to encourage one another, to strengthen one another, not to put one another down. Amen? All right, well, I will just stop there. I'm going to do it 2 minutes under to make up for your... All right. All right, so we'll see you guys later. Thank you.